From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Greetings, grasshoppers, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm Hunter Dusing down in Dallas, Texas. Joining me in the wild outback of Australia is my Joey pal, Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hey, hey.
And in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado, Mr. John Grace. Say hello, John.
Hola.
So the movie we're doing this week is John G. Avildsen's Karate Kid, starring Ralph Macchio. But before that, Stuart, you said you had some shout-outs you wanted to do.
Yes, a couple of thank yous, actually, more than shout-outs. But shout-out to actually everybody who listens. Doesn't matter who you are, where you are. It's just a big thanks for doing that. And it's much appreciated more than you guys and girls know. Also, all those who are active on the suck-a-fuck social media thingy webpage, the group there, thank you for that. But I need to give a big couple of thanks to, first off, Mr. Eric Sulev, friend of the show, friend of ours, who was good enough to come through for me when my daughter needed something from the US urgently, and I put the word out, and he basically got back to me in about half an hour or so later, and said, yep, he can help out, and managed to do all that, and get the stuff down to me for her and myself as well. So thanks, Eric, you champion. And also, big shout out as well goes to the man, Anthony Nesbitt, who I hit Anthony up looking for some stuff from the UK, some CDs of this band, because of course Amazon doesn't ship to Australia anymore. And I needed a couple, four CDs and this movie called Cat and Mouse with Kirk Douglas on DVD, which was cheap. Had one I haven't seen for years, but I remember being very good. Anthony sent the stuff to me, but didn't just send it. He sent that and about a fucking truckload full of Blu-rays he didn't want anymore. And Anthony doesn't just send stuff. Oh, by the way, I will backtrack as well. Eric did the same thing. He sent me about 30 Italian horrors on DVD. He wasn't after. He didn't need any more. So now,
oh, wow.
You got, yeah, I'm just like, he just sent a spindle full of movies and all originals, mind you. I think they were. I can't remember. And it was like
originals, like not bootlegs or?
Yeah, yeah, like the original disc, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. And so I said, well, now if the guys ever suggest an Italian horror, most likely got it, so I've got no excuse to back out of it. But Anthony, yes, sent me a whole bunch of stuff. Sorcerer on Blu-ray, which I was after.
Ooh.
And the British version as well, which is actually better than the US one I've been checking on.
Well, hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Doesn't have the freaking color scheme.
No.
Is that why it's better?
No. Just a higher end code and also like a 75-minute interview we did with that Nicholas Winding Refn or something.
Oh, that thing's hilarious.
Oh, okay.
That's what we get the bits of on YouTube then.
Yeah, that's great that's the one where Winding Refn says that Only God Forgives is a classic. And he goes, oh, is that a classic? Are you sure?
Yeah.
It's okay. That's a classic, all right? That's a movie that lasts. So your movie
ambulance.
Is...
Ambulance!
It's barely an ambulance here.
Just a couple of quick other titles Anthony sent me. Oh, but by the way, he sent there's more on the way. So, I don't know.
Oh, God.
One called... And these are like the big special editions. Twilight's Last Gleaming. I've never seen it. I don't think I've even heard of it. But it's some political thriller from the 70s. He sent one called... What is it? Et Belle et Bête.
What the fuck is Beauty and the Beast?
And Beauty, he ended up being that, what's the frog's name? I can't remember. Clouseau, his name?
Are you talking about Cocteau?
Oh, yeah, Cocteau. Yeah. Although, yeah. Clouseau. Oh, fuck, I don't know what the hell that is.
Clouseau.
It's the Pink Panther. Yeah, same thing.
The Cocteau of Beauty and the Beast is very good, and so is the Christoph Gans one, which is... Add that to the spreadsheet. That's a one we need to do.
Right, right.
Yeah, we do really need to do that one. That's pretty cool.
And another one there that Anthony sent, which I must bring up, is he goes to me, oh, do you want a copy of The Exorcist 2 on Blu-ray on the house? Yeah. But he didn't just send it. He didn't send, like, the standard copy one. He sent the one that had been out only about a couple of weeks before.
The
two-disc Scream Factory one. I'm like, holy shit, I have my eye on this.
Okay, so speaking of, I have the Scream Factory Exorcist 3.
Right.
And so, you know, the wife and I have been watching horror movies, and she'd seen The Exorcist, but she'd never seen The Exorcist 3. And you know, if you're doing Exorcist, you can skip Exorcist 2 unless you have morbid curiosity. But Exorcist 3 is kind of the true sequel, right? But yeah. The Scream Factory Blu-ray has this Legion cut on there, which is supposed to be, quote-unquote, more true to William Peter Blatty's original vision, because Morgan Creek kind of had him add some stuff, you know, add an exorcism scene, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It says director's cut on the thing. Calling that a director's cut is, it's like calling, I mean, you know, it is so shoddy that, It speaks poorly to William Peter Blatty. It is so bad. My wife was going, this movie's horrible. And I said, I am so sorry. I should have just shown you the theatrical version, because I hadn't watched it before. I went, hey, let's watch this version.
Yeah, theatrical was good. I enjoyed it. Always have. I mean,
The Exorcist 3 is a good movie. Just stick with the theatrical cut, honestly. Yeah. Unless you're a diehard fan who loves disappointment, the Legion cut is totally skippable, because it uses a lot of VHS... alternate
VHS
takes.
Sourcing.
And they don't have that. The scenes just don't have any dramatic punch at all. Like the scenes where Kinderman is talking to the Gemini killer in the prison in this new cut are so boring. I mean, so boring.
Well, it's also not necessarily a director's cut.
It's not. Really, it's really
it's
not.
It's just a rough cut that they're putting out. You know,
Shout Factory shouldn't have used the term director's cut on there. It should have just been, and they do say when you start it up, this is kind of a rough guesstimate as to what it could look like, but it's really, you know, it'll make you reach for that theatrical cut. Fast.
Don't worry, Zolly Becker will go after him.
I know, Zolly is the anti-shout.
And the hell will never end for them, you know.
They actually hate him because he constantly is pointing out all the shortcomings. But he was talking about that Return of the Living Dead 2 Blu-ray. He's right. The audio sounds like a VHS tape. It's really
because it very likely is.
But
they had to recall the Bruce Lee box set because of him.
Yeah.
That cost them a fortune, but they were trying to foist off fake upscales or whatever, upconversions as HD.
Apparently, he said that the Shout Select versions are worth owning, and those are the ones I have. Another big blunder was the Billy Jack set. Apparently, they screwed that one up really bad.
They zoom boxed it at 1.85 instead of scope on the sequels.
Anyway, you brought up Exorcist 2. It made me want to recount that Exorcist 3.
I've never seen Exorcist 3. That's odd.
It's awesome. It's really good.
It's always escaped me, and I like George C. Scott. So
It has one of my favorite scary scenes ever in a horror movie in it.
What's that? I know which one you're talking about. I'll guess.
It's that long take.
Yeah.
Far away in the hallway in the hospital. That is one of my favorite, like, OMG, jump out of your seat.
Yeah. That was, know, like, my brother and myself, we saw it in the theater when it came out, and we fucking shit our pants. It was like, oh!
Yeah. So, yeah, John, it's totally worth seeing, but watch the theatrical cut and just stick with that. But
other people have told me I should check it out, and I just haven't gotten around to it.
It's really good, written and directed by Blatty. So
yeah, well, you know, we used to have these things called video stores that when you wanted to watch something old, you could just go out and rent it. And I don't know, they don't exist anymore. Now it's actually tougher to watch older
movies. Movie trading company. A lot of people in Dallas will go, oh, you know, we don't have any video stores anymore. I'm like, go to Movie Trading Company. You can buy or rent any item in the store. If it's a brand new movie off the shelf, they'll open it up and let you rent it, you know?
Yeah, and we don't have that anymore.
If you live in Dallas or anywhere with a vintage stock or Movie Trading Company, you can rent from those people. They have that business model. A lot of people just don't know it. You know, They think you have to buy everything there. But yes, the video store is a, you know, there was one that was kind of a mainstay of Dallas for a long time that finally closed last year.
Well, there's like with Filmstruck getting pulled this week, you suddenly see everybody talk about it. I miss video stores. You know,
yeah, I know. No, dude. Okay, so Filmstruck, you know, I used that to watch Singing in the Rain in class, and I was going, this is such a great resource because. It has a lot of the old classic movies. It has stuff like I'd never seen, like, you know, my wife and I watched Yentl off of there.
You watch what? Yentl?
Yentl. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I did a double take too when I read that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but it was just it's a movie I've always meant to see, but you know, but my wife went, oh, it's on there, let's watch it. So we did.
You want to head for the divorce court?
Watch A Serious Man afterwards.
Want to get divorced already, do you? That's
what? It's
up to you. You want to get divorced already, do you?
Yeah.
Fucking mental.
But so, but, you know, and plus, you know, there's a teacher who's teaching the class with me, and there's some stuff he hasn't seen, so it's a great way for me to, hey, use my account and watch it. And he was watching a lot of stuff, you know, so... We were going, oh, this is such a great resource for class, and then boom, it's, you know, it's going to be gone at the end of November. So,
okay,
crazy.
Yeah, probably because it was had Yentl in there. It was like, oh, that's it. We can't.
Yeah,
we can't get any worse than this. So
the credibility was gone.
About the Talmud instead of killing the six-fingered man, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the movie we're doing this week is The Karate Kid, as I mentioned earlier. Many of you will be shocked to hear that I had never seen The Karate Kid before watching it for this show.
Right.
I was shocked.
Yeah, you're not shocked or you're shocked?
I was shocked because I just assume everybody has always watched this movie.
Yeah, it's one that's so ubiquitous in the culture.
Yeah.
You almost feel like you've seen it even if you haven't.
Right.
You know,
sweep
like,
the leg, Hunter.
Sweep the leg, wax on, wax off.
Right.
You know, it just, and I knew the concept, you know, he's trying to get Elizabeth Shue, the gang of blonde haired Chads kind of, you know, messes with him. And he's got to learn, but he learns karate from comedian Pat Morita.
Yeah. Who beat out Toshiro Mifune for the
role. Yeah, he did. I was about to say that. He beat out Toshiro Mifune for this role. And of course, you know, he trains him by having him do regular household tasks like painting fences and waxing car. Well, I don't know if waxing a car is a regular household task, but having him do chores, essentially.
Yeah.
And he learns karate by doing chores. And
bullshit. All right. Yeah.
Eventually defeats the Chadzilla, William Zabka, and
He was like super Chad. He's like ultimate Chad, or whatever.
Yeah. Like, and the guy who plays the Cobra Kai, what's the guy's name who plays
the Sensei Martin Cove?
Martin Cove, yeah. Martin Cove plays Kreese, the like Chad trainer.
Well, no, what I love is when they walk into the dojo. I don't know if this is visible on the video version, but there's like a photo of Kreese as a mercenary.
Yeah, he's
like he's in Rhodesia or something.
You know what he is? He's basically he's what's his name? Tom Berenger from Platoon.
Before Platoon. Well, that was like the early 80s when Soldier of Fortune was sold on every newsstand, and the whole idea of mercenary or merc work was legit if you were in the military and you were getting out and you didn't know what to do, but you wanted to actually fight in a war. So the mercenary thing was pretty mainstream.
By the way, I just want to point out that Chad McQueen, son of Steve McQueen, plays Dutch in this movie.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being named Chad McQueen? I just want to take a moment to think about how rad it would be to be Chad McQueen.
Jeez.
Chadwick McQueen.
And he's actually one of the only cast members that had had karate training before doing the movie.
Yeah, totally. I'm sure. Yeah. So this movie is by John G. Avildsen, who's most famous for Rocky. He's also the father of metal label owner Ash Avildsen.
Of course, you would find that connection.
Yeah. I didn't, until I was reading up on some stuff for this movie, I was like, oh, Ash Avildsen's John Avildsen's son? That's totally crazy. The owner of Sumerian Records.
Which label? Sumerian.
Sumerian Records. They have Periphery and Body Count.
Don't care. Never heard of the other band.
Well, their stuff is kind of the metal that's cool with the kids, like the sort of djent stuff, like the metalcore and kind of the proggy sort of Meshuga type stuff.
So all the shit stuff.
Yeah, it's stuff that I'm frankly not that into. I thought the Body Count record that they put out was awesome, but that like Born of Osiris, stuff like that, really kind of big with the kids metal, you know. But Ash Alvitz, he is a big name in sort of that realm of music. So Karate Kid to me kind of felt like a sort of attempt to do another Rocky, but with sort of the kind of karate culture. And it's produced by Jerry Weintraub, by the way. Isn't he the guy who worked with Bruce Lee?
No,
that was Robert.
That's Fred Weintraub. Not related, believe it or not.
Not related?
Yeah. Right, not related.
Interesting, because I went, oh, it's the Bruce Lee guy, but then...
No.
But when I looked
at if it was him, it would have been Robert Klaus directing it.
Yeah,
forgotten within a month of release.
Yeah, if that was the case, John wouldn't have been here this week. It was a Robert Klaus film. Like, I'm sick this week.
Also written by Robert Mark Kamen, who's Luc Besson's scribe. Right. The guy who does Transporter and Taken.
Right, Robert Mark Kamen is very highly paid script doctor and screenwriter. But the funny thing is, he's actually a legit karate practitioner in terms of going to Okinawa back in the 70s and training with the teachers who were still around then.
So he's pretty, brings some authenticity to elements of the script.
Yeah. But
as far as you even have Bill Conti doing the music.
Yeah.
Who did the music for Rocky. Although I thought this movie, the main theme at the opening was more of a full orchestra than I'm used to from Conti.
Mm-hmm.
But then it kind of settles into more of what you'd expect from Conti.
I think that was to give the impression that it was like, this is a big studio teen film.
Yeah, it felt very, the score's opening felt like a John Williams.
Right, because you got to remember, this is 1984, and the theaters were filled with teen flicks. I mean, it was just, and most of them were of the horny slob comedy type. You know, we were still in that phase.
Yeah,
and so this is like a violent after school special that was made in widescreen.
It is, and I got to tell you, from the get-go, I hated Daniel LaRusso.
Yeah, I got to watch this again with my son because, for him to see it for the first time, the Alamo Drafthouse screened it. And I hadn't watched it in 30 years. And I was surprised at my reaction to the characters all these years later as an adult. It's like, God, he's a lion brat.
No, he sucks. So Daniel LaRusso, first off, he looks like a little kid.
Yeah.
And one thing that struck me was, Elizabeth Shue is into him, and Elizabeth Shue looks like she's way too old to be dating.
She looks about like she's 8 years older or something at least.
Yeah, she looks like a woman and he looks like a freshman in high school,
Yeah.
And another thing is, so you have these loudmouth, New Jersey people. And they're going to California. Oh,
yeah.
Boy. You know,
That was a big deal back then.
Two of the worst places in the world.
That was a desired thing in 1984. It was still the golden era of California.
Yeah, California used to be like Texas, where it just drew everybody.
Yeah, yeah, it really was. Like,
which is why Texas will turn blue eventually, because everybody's coming here. But you know, then Daniel goes into this, he's in this new town. And immediately he's moving in on the girls there, and Chadzilla and Chad Gamera and Chad Mothra and Chad King Ghidra don't like it. And because he's kind of a liar, he's annoying, he's dishonorable, they get in a fight with him, and Daniel tries like dirty fight tactics. Like getting cheap shots in and stuff. And I was going, this kid's a yo-yo, you know?
Yeah.
I was going, I like, you know, I'm sorry, but I don't see Zabka as being that bad of a guy. He's defending his, you know, he's trying to win his girl back.
The while trying to do, you know, martial arts while he's hopped up on Red Bull, it looks like. He's jumping around the place
I do got to say, though, speaking of that scene where they show up at the beach, I do love the 80s aesthetics of this movie. You know, the dudes on their bikes with like the red jackets and the bandanas. So it's just like an anime. It's great.
Scenery looks like something you'd see in an Andy Sidaris film.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching, there are certain movies that just bang on get the 80s aesthetics right. This one does it well, and I think Michael Mann's Manhunter is another one that's just boom, you know, cool. This one for sure. But you know, then he goes to school and Bananarama's cool summer place. Boy, you want to talk about a band that's all production and no talent? Bananarama's got you covered.
Yeah, but I mean, that all looks, boy.
Oh yeah, no. They
yeah,
were,
it was the video. It was, man. They look good in the videos.
Let's find some hot chicks. Let's get a producer to make some catchy beats with "Cruel Summer," and let's have them sort of passably carry a tune through
it. There's a reason their Venus cover was on MTV like nonstop for like 6 months.
Mm.
Every hour they would play that, and it's because they look good in the video. You can go look at it on YouTube. But yeah, go look at the videos. We're not selling it on the music.
But you know, the "Cruel Summer," though, you hear it immediately and you go, oh, there it is. You know,
it's a synth beat. That's what we remember. Yeah, the bass line is really cool. So
I've actually got the soundtrack in this house on CD.
Didn't know there was this. I don't think the soundtrack was ever put out, was it?
Yeah, I've got it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like $2 or somewhere. I think if it stinks, it goes out the car window. But yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
But another thing, so something that I was kind of, you know, I can't help but compare this to Rocky when I watch it.
Everybody did. Back in 84, every film critic compared it to Rocky away.
It begs to be compared to Rocky because it has so much of the same talent. And it's another underdog story. But my thing is, there's a reason Rocky works. And there's things about The Karate Kid that don't work. And
oh really? Like trying to catch a fucking fly with chopsticks? Oh come on, that'd be so rough.
Yeah. Oh. Well, but I'm talking about just the overall narrative. So Daniel is like this disruptive force who comes he's an alien outsider who comes into this community, and he sort of is forcing his way into everyone's lives, and he doesn't belong, he doesn't fit. And the whole thing is him kind of forcing his way in. Rocky, on the other hand, is a down on his luck member of a community. And as a result, and he is a guy who's blown his opportunities, but he's given an opportunity and he takes it and tries to make the best of it. Daniel, on the other hand, is a guy who is, you know, he has a certain circumstance. He's, you know, had to move to California because of his mother against his will. But at the same time, the way he integrates himself into that community is in a pretty hostile and aggressive manner.
You're saying he comes on too strong.
He comes like that scene at the Halloween dance. You know, he basically attacks those guys in the bathroom, gets people to get into car wrecks, and then is shocked when these guys want to beat the crap out of him. I mean, the beating he gets is deserved. I was sitting there thinking.
Well, you got to remember is that in a prior scene, they had run him off the road when he was in his bicycle.
Oh.
And they were on their motorcycle. So it was kind of a backlash that it got overdone.
It was a backlash.
Yeah, he was counterattacking, or he was doing a counterattack, and it kind of like created a greater event. Of course, they ended up all getting their asses kicked by Mr. Miyagi.
Sure,
because it's a gang fight. That's not fair in any.
No, of course it's of course.
But this narrative that I see millennials doing on YouTube, like say Daniel was the bad guy, is absolute nonsense. If you really watch the movie,
it's not the bad guy. I just didn't think that.
And I mean, it's Allie coming on strong to him because he flirts with her at the beach, and you know she's. Really, if there's a true villain, it might be her.
Well, she's trying to do the thing girls do, which is get the ex, the recent ex.
Yeah, make him jealous. And he's
reacting to that, and Daniel plays into it. But I just do not find Daniel to be all that likable.
No, he's not that likable, but also you see in the film, he has a lack of a father. And his mother is a liar. She takes him across the country. She claims she's got a job at a computer company. Halfway through the film, she's working as a hostess in a restaurant. She lied to him.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know.
Yeah, you pick up. I picked up on it watching it this time. I'd never noticed this when I was a kid watching it in the theater and then on HBO. But, of course, you see things differently as an adult when you're going back and watching it. So I was looking for little things like that. I noticed his mom lied to him. She claims, oh, the job didn't work out, and then she's working as a hostess in a restaurant. Well,
and that's something you would never see in a movie today because, you know, the single mother is kind of a revered figure.
Yeah, she lied to him. It's like it's very obviously there. And so he's you know, he had to leave his friends and everything. There's that scene he just blows up at her. And,
yeah.
But it's true. It's because she lied her ass off to him. To manipulate him into going out there. And, you know, I can't remember if they actually cover what happened to the father. But yeah.
I don't think it's ever even addressed.
Right. And then Mr. Miyagi is sort of this father figure who kind of really teaches him manners and work ethic as well. Like,
well,
that
was the thing, though, that I liked about this movie.
Yeah.
Was that it's almost, you know, just having a work ethic is the real. You know, the real fight to be had.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a work ethic, if you can paint a fence, if you can wax a car, you can learn to fight. Because
right.
To learn to fight takes a work ethic.
Bullshit.
And if you don't have the work ethic,
bullshit.
You ain't going to be learning how to fight. You know?
Cheap labor. It's cheap labor, man.
Well, that's
cheap fucking labor. That's what it is.
Where's it? They're going, man. Mr. Miyagi's getting a good deal out of this.
Yeah, of course
well,
it is.
But I think there is some wisdom there. I do think there is some really valuable.
Just
because
he's Japanese or Asian doesn't mean he's got wisdom. It means nothing.
Well, okay. You
You're
know,
buying into too much of the crap they're feeding.
Stereotyping here.
Of course there is.
Oh yeah, I mean,
it's like you've seen an old black guy in the movies. He can suddenly he's a blues master. That's not true.
Well, and another thing about Miyagi is that, you know, the trainer character in Rocky Mickey is sort of a magical character the way Miyagi is.
Yeah.
Miyagi is sort of a figure who can just kind of do anything.
Yeah.
But he's also revealed to be a depressed drunk as well.
Yeah, I guess we do find out that
he lost his wife and child.
Yeah.
So he has no child. So Daniel is sort of like his adopted son that he finally gets to be a father to. And his karate ability is not in a mystical way like okay, that in the beginning of Karate Kid 2, there's a confrontation between him and Kreese that was filmed for the first movie, but they didn't include it in the final edit because they decided it was better off ending where it did. And sometimes I wonder if they wanted to do that just so Miyagi didn't look like Superman by the end of the film. But, you know, he just taught Daniel a work ethic and some basic old school karate tricks that allowed him to dominate the tournament. So it's and get him to the top. So, you know, it's the bone mending thing that supposedly that was a very controversial point because they tried to hire other screenwriters to rewrite the film.
Well, that scene was where I was going, okay, this guy's just magic, where he kind of rubs his hands together.
Yeah, the bone mending thing. And this was there was some top screenwriter, and I can't remember the guy's name, but they asked him to do a rewrite of the film.
Robert Towne. No, I'm kidding.
No, but it was somebody on that level, and he said, well, if I write this, Daniel LaRusso has to lose at the end. And they said he can't lose. And they said, yeah, but there's no... If you've got Miyagi telling him through the whole film, winning doesn't matter, and then he wins at the end, what's the point of all the things you've been foreshadowing, you know, by having this bone-mending thing be the deus ex machina or whatever you want to call it, you know? And it's just like, there is a point to that. Like, throughout the whole film, he's like, win, lose, no matter. And then, but at the end, he wins anyway. But you got to send the audience home happy, I guess. Suppose that's why Pauline Kael trashed the film.
Miserable.
Well, and speaking of the music, you know, the song "You're the Best Around" is kind of notorious.
Yeah,
thanks to South Park.
And I heard that song was meant for Rocky II.
Yeah,
but it didn't get used. That's why they say history repeats itself.
Yep.
And it just ended up getting used in this. I remember Corolla. Adam Carolla interviewed the guy who wrote it. He was like, wait, why didn't you rewrite it or something? You know, history repeats itself. It's not in Karate Kid. There's no history repeating itself. Or anyway, but.
Well, he couldn't fit in some lyrics about waxing cars and painting a fence.
Waxing cars and painting fences.
Just didn't work.
That sounds like something Glenn Danzig would have written.
Right. Maybe if they'd hired Michael DeBar to do like a rewrite or something.
Whoa, waxing cars.
It's a movie that had an interesting history because Clint Eastwood was almost the director. And I remember reading about this in the newspaper back when entertainment news was very rare in your newspaper. But Eastwood had walked away from the Karate Kid project at Columbia because they wouldn't allow him to cast his son, Kyle.
Yeah, Kyle should do the music.
He wanted Kyle to play LaRusso. And maybe he wanted him to play Johnny. I don't know. But probably LaRusso. And then as revenge, when Eastwood was making Heartbreak Ridge, he had all Coke machines removed from any locations they used because Coke was owned by Coke owned Columbia Pictures at the time.
I'll show them. There's going to be no Coca-Cola machines. I show Mario Van Peebles how to play guitar.
Well, now I got to go back and watch Heartbreak Ridge and see if there's like Pepsi or RC or something everywhere.
Yeah, RC Cola.
Yeah, RC Cola machine or some shit. Because Eastwood was so fucking petty about it, you know.
I'll show those punks. They won't cast my son. I'll have Scott playing stuff soon enough. Kyle's going to do all the music.
Yeah, Scott I don't think Scott was around at that time. I think he was Spermazoa in Eastwood.
Listen,
over, so.
I can detect a gleam in my eye when it's there, John.
Wait, I mean, this guy has what is it? Undocumented how many kids he has? Unconfirmed?
Nobody knows.
Super
the
sperm Eastwood.
The creature was a breeding ground.
He's kind of like, who's the bloke that flew across to Europe? Charles Lindbergh. Yeah, Charles Lindbergh going and impregnating women in Germany, like in the 50s.
Yeah.
To keep his genetics going.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
That's Eastwood. It's the same thing.
Just that's what the Chad does, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and then Ralph Macchio, this is a weird thing. He was like 24, 25 when he played Daniel LaRusso.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. He was like one of the oldest.
He looks legit like a kid in this
movie.
That's
how he got cast. They always cast these guys with genetic issues or something who always look.
He's like Gary Coleman.
Yeah, I was going to say, you should have cast Gary Coleman in this as LaRusso. Would have been better.
Gary Coleman. Yeah.
That's not the first time you've made that mistake either. You've made it plenty of times. Yeah. Gary Cole's the guy from Office Space, you dolt.
I know. That's why I was.
Gary Coleman's another color altogether.
Man, that's really messed up. He does not look. Oh man, I'd be.
Well, that's why. So when you if you watch Karate Kid 3, he's really weird looking in that.
And fat.
And that's because he's fat. He's like an out of shape 32-year-old or something.
Mm. That's a shit movie, Karate Kid 3.
Oh, it's horrible.
Fucking saving a bonsai plant is
the
dumbest
next
idea.
Karate Kid?
Pretty bad.
With Hilary Swank?
Not good.
Not good.
Yeah, I would say the Cobra Kai YouTube sequel series is a far better follow-up to this movie.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I watched the whole thing.
Is it good? It's good?
Yeah, it's good. It's actually good. I was surprised. Believe me, I really did not expect to like it at all.
I haven't seen it.
Interesting.
It's pretty good. It gives Johnny a fair shake. It gives LaRusso a fair shake. It's actually... It addresses some of the inconsistencies of the storytelling between the original movie and the sequels. And so it's funny how it alludes to that without overdoing it and yet tells a new story. It works. It surprisingly works well and has kind of the same lessons of the original movie. The only problem is the content is very R-rated. I can't show it to my kid who watched this.
Oh, that's too bad. I don't like that trend in TV shows right now that everything has to have a ton of sex and nudity in it.
Yeah, well, this is a lot of, you know, it's R-rated language, and there's a lot of jokes that wouldn't make it into a PG-13 movie. It's very R-rated level on humor, and there's no sex, but there's a lot of talk about it in R-rated fashion. It's just like, I can't show it to my kid who likes the original film. So, oh well.
That's too bad.
Oh, speaking of kids, I've got the quote of the year from one of my kids. He said to me, Dad, I prefer Rob Zombie's Halloween over the original. I said,
oh,
what?
No.
I said, are you serious?
So, Stuart, what military school did you send your kid to?
Yeah.
Australian SAS University?
Yeah, something like that.
Did you send him to the island from Papillon?
No, I sent him to Cambodia to join the Khmer Rouge, I think.
You said he wears glasses, do what you will.
Did you say no son, you're wrong, and then he went yeah or something like that?
No,
yeah!
He actually said he likes Rob Zombie as a filmmaker better than John Carpenter. I said go away.
He really did.
Yeah, it's my 12-year-old who said that, and he enjoys Zombies Halloween 2 over the 1981 Halloween 2. I'm like, go, just you're upset.
Okay,
me.
So
I don't know if he's taking a piss or what, but he did pretty serious about it.
So either your kid is, you know, a master troll, or...
I wouldn't put that past him, actually. I really wouldn't put that past him.
Or you failed as a parent. I mean, one's a very serious charge, so we need to, you know, get on this, all right?
I'm guessing the troll bit might be...
let's hope so.
Honestly, he said to me, the original Halloween Dad is too slow. I said, that's the whole charm of it. It's meant to be slow and builds up. I said, Rob Zombie's one's just screaming and swearing and bad dialogue.
But like every other word is F. You know?
Yeah.
It's just his movies have this, you know, they make Tarantino films look like Howard Hawks productions in terms of language.
And when he films his horror movies like action films, I've always said that's his problem.
That's the problem with a lot of horror movies.
Yeah, they throw it all out in the front. There's no mood. There's no tension. No atmosphere. There's no build-up. There's just nothing in there that you can really get into.
Yeah. The zombie tried to take the last 15 minutes of the original Halloween and make it a two-hour version of that. Just
well, the last 15 minutes of Halloween even seemed slow compared to what Zombie was doing. I mean...
Has anybody seen the new one, the new Halloween?
That's not yet. I haven't.
I've been pestering. My son's been pestering me to go see it, but I'm like, maybe this weekend. I don't know.
I'm going to go see it at some point, but it's just a matter of getting off my butt and going to the theater, which I never do anymore. So.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the last new movie I saw, and it was I can't think of it. It's been like 4 or 5 months since I've been to see a new movie.
I looked at my Letterboxd. I could tell you, but...
I probably have to do that to remember
the last movie I remember liking in the theater was A Quiet Place, which was quite good,
and I never saw that.
Good, you should watch it. It was good.
Yeah. When it hits one of these 10 or a dozen streaming channels, I'll try to give it a shot.
Yeah, it's worth watching. It's a horror movie that is worth your time.
Yeah, I heard it's good, but yeah. Me and horror, we ain't pals these days.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it.
Thanks, Eli Roth. Thanks for turning me off of a genre I used to enjoy, but may just be getting older as well.
So, but So the Karate Kid, just getting back to this. Cobra Kai is something I wanted to bring up. I haven't seen any of it. I'm sure the first episode's free on YouTube or something.
The first two are. And I would still recommend suffering through the sequels before you watch it. But, you could probably start it without even watching the sequels. But the first two episodes are free.
I do want to check out two and maybe three. I don't know.
No, I don't like them, but, you know, you may want to see them.
Is two any good? Two?
I don't care for it at all.
Okay.
And it was a disappointment. I was just like, you could tell they rushed it to theaters like a year later, 2 years later, and it was just made to make money. It's not made for any real reason.
And it's another Alvidsson.
Alvidsson, Hawaii substituting as Okinawa. They basically go to Okinawa, and he runs into the Chads of Okinawa, who are played by Los Angeles Japanese American actors.
It looks like the same team did the first three, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, they brought back, I was told by my Gojiru teacher that who knows Robert Mark Kamen, he says that Kamen actually didn't write anything in the third film. They just paid to have his name on there.
Oh, interesting. I think that happens more often than you'd...
Oh, yeah, I know. That definitely, with the stories we've heard, it's definitely happening more often than anybody realizes.
There's the 2010 version with Jaden Smith. That was kind of a vehicle for him. With
yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Chinese globalist.
You bring up Karate Kid with younger kids, that this is the version they know that they've seen.
I think it's forgotten. I think it's been forgotten so quick.
It has.
I think it has, but you'd be surprised. Like, there are a lot of kids who go, "Oh, the Karate Kid with when you say Jackie Chan, that's the only movie they've seen."
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've been bringing this back constantly because it's a big Gen X favorite. And it's like probably one of the first examples of bad boomer parenting, you know, in a mainstream film. So I think Karate Kid could easily make the original. It's making a cultural comeback of sorts.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've got the Cobra Kai series.
And that was really huge.
You were bringing up the millennial narrative about Daniel being the bad guy. That series being called Cobra Kai might be, fed
it
by
that. It implies it, but that's not necessarily necessarily the case. It's like everybody is basically, there's really no good guy or bad guy. It's just everybody's kind of messed up and trying to find their way back to what they are supposed to be or what they're meant to be. And that's like, it's all very gray area, but it works. You know, usually I can't stand this sort of thing, but it actually works here. Even with all the contrived golden age of television, episodic writing, it actually works.
Okay. I got to check it out.
Yeah, it's worth it. I mean, it's totally worth watching. It has better karate action than the original films, which is pretty bad Pat Johnson choreography. You know, you hit me, I hit you. You hit me, I hit you. You know.
Yeah.
Now it's my turn to throw a kick. Now it's your turn to throw a punch.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's shift gears and talk about karate a little bit.
Okay.
You know, yay, it's a karate movie. Stuart to a lesser extent, we're fans of kung fu cinema, we like this stuff, but karate's not something you actually, outside of Karate Kid, you don't see karate in movies a lot because it's not very cinematic. But I remember in the 90s, when I was growing up in the early 90s, you know, and I'm sure the late 80s as well. Karate was sort of the martial arts style. If you were a little kid and you wanted to take fighting lessons, karate was the thing, right?
Right, because Taekwondo schools were all over the place.
Yeah, there was Taekwondo and there was karate. Those were the two I was aware of when I was a kid.
And there's like, you got to remember, there's like 20 different systems of karate. There's 20 different systems of karate. There's a bunch of different ones.
Hey, yo, but then there's karate movies, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And then, the funny thing is, like, schools really grabbed onto the Karate Kid as a promotional tool. And they would do demos at theatrical screenings and stuff, and it would get kids to sign up. It was like the lifeblood of karate schools that were, if a teacher was under the foolish idea he could do it full-time, and run a school full time teaching karate to kids, then it was a huge, huge boost to that industry.
Well, and that's something that you and I were talking about recently, that, you know, running a martial arts school is a kind of an economically foolish venture.
Yeah, and I was looking at some of the really well-known teachers of the past, like Ed Parker and Richie Barathy. They couldn't keep their schools open beyond like 8 or 9 years, or even 10 years.
And so Andrew Farmer, a guy who's been on our show, mm-hmm. been on his show a bunch. When he was living in Dallas, I would occasionally go to martial arts classes with his buddy Bobby Blakey, who's a film critic and stuntman.
Mm-hmm.
But he would have lessons in his backyard.
Yeah.
Is why pay for the overhead, you know?
Right, right. That's what a lot of people are doing.
And plus, you know, people who showed up, like me and Andrew, we'd show up 1 week and then not be there the next week, you know, and maybe never show up again. Right. So, not a lot of people have the in one reason for us was that it was clear across creation to go there. But, when you run a martial arts school, it's, you know, you're fighting an uphill battle because it takes a lot of work ethic to get students who will come every, you know, and come and train, you know.
And not only that, some really good teachers had to retire because they were sued by their own students.
Oh,
for like, you know, you hit them during a demo or something accidentally and they'll sue you for physical harm or whatever, because we became lawsuit crazy in the last 30 years or so.
Yeah. And, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, you know, lawsuits were a controversial thing.
Right. It was considered unmanly and
it was considered to be like, when my family talked about it, they would say that was dishonorable, like kind of slimy behavior to sue somebody. Cause I remember, I had a family member a long time ago who was dragged to death by a bus. And it was a mistake. She was real young and she, you know, the bus door closed on her shoelaces and the bus took off and dragged her to death.
Jeez.
Yeah. And, I remember asking, "Oh, did the parents sue the bus line?" And they kind of looked at me, and you know, because my grandparents kind of looked at me and went, "No, that wasn't going to bring the kid back. That wasn't going to bring their daughter back."
Yeah,
you know, they were like, "That's absurd. Why would you sue over that?"
Right.
Because the only and it was explained to me, the only reason you would do that is to bilk some money out of people.
Right, and that's all it is now, is lawyers making money off of FinFin lawsuits and other bullshit. It's just fat people who don't want to work, so they'll claim they were on a diet drug that made them ill. And,
it's what they call rent seeking.
Yes, exactly. And you know, so but yeah, Ron Van Cleef, to name one teacher who's admitted, famous black belt, ran a school in New York for many years, and he said his own black belt sued him. Because he had popped him a few times and during testing or whatever.
They saw an opportunity to.
Yeah. And so he was out of it. He says, "I'm not teaching anymore." And then I think he didn't. I think he taught lessons like in the Caribbean or wherever he was living for a while. And he was just teaching old folks like cardio kickboxing or something. You know, that's what a lot of these guys resorted to doing. It was like, "I like teaching, but I can't risk getting sued again."
It's a great example, though, of how lawyers would ruin everything, though.
They do. They totally do. Well, Back to the Future was right. Kill all the lawyers and, you know, you could have a flying car that runs on trash.
I'm surprised Zemeckis would advocate that, but it's true. No, that's a side to teaching martial arts that I hadn't considered. I mean, I remember doing kickboxing, and I think my teacher had me sign something.
Yeah, you have to sign insurance forms and stuff. I think I had to sign something taking Gojiru, and it's like the least physically punishing class that I've – but taught at a church, got to be legally responsible, so, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and that's everywhere.
I don't know. It's sad. But I don't know. I haven't done a martial art in a long time. I did kickboxing for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, I should add, my Kenpo teacher, when I was taking Kenpo for like 3 years, he got into martial arts because he saw The Karate Kid in the theaters in 1984.
I would imagine this movie probably had that effect because,
it totally did.
Karate and Taekwondo were the two fighting styles to get into when I was a kid.
I wonder how many kids, when they were bullied, tried the crane move after watching the Karate.
I hope not. That'll get you killed.
I hope none because that, I remember seeing that in the clips from the movie and thinking that's ridiculous. Why would you do that? And in the context of the movie, it makes sense. Because it's one of the things he learns, and then he loses the use of a leg.
Is it even illegal? Is it a legal move or not?
It's a legal move. I mean, by whatever that tournament was supposed to be. No karate like that has ever existed in the history of the United States. Where they're like fighting and doing full contact hits, and no, they're not wearing gloves. Or and by the 1980s, it was mandatory to have like foot and feet protection.
Well, I remember
sparring gear.
Yeah, I remember when I would go to karate tournaments when I was a kid, everybody was wearing foot and head and feet pads. It was not like a fight. It was points based. It was like fencing almost, where, you know, it was kind of based on scoring points rather than, you know, defeating your opponent in battle.
Right.
And I'm sure that was probably for legal reasons, but, you know, also, you know, you're dealing with minors and
business. Well, also, you were marketing heavy to kids. There's a huge industry in selling protective gear. Century sparring gear would wear out after a couple of years, and you have to buy a new set, and they were pretty pricey. And, you know, there was a whole industry to that, just like there was with belt tests. There's no such thing as color belts at Okinawa, but there's color belt testing in America, and I think there's some in Japan as well, because it's based on Japanese swimming teams, but it didn't exist in Okinawa.
Mm-hmm.
White belt and your belt over time got very dark because it got dirty because you never washed it and became the black belt. That's the Okinawan philosophy about belts. But over here, you got Taekwondo with their multi-camouflage belts and gold belts and red belts and all that. And, you know, it's their belt crazy because belt test in the average school is $50. Testing for black belt could cost a couple hundred dollars.
Jeez.
So it's a way to make money.
Yeah. It's all a money-making scheme. You know, it's not always this honorable art. You will find good teachers if you look hard enough who will teach you because they like teaching and they like to keep the art and pass it down. But yeah, when you're talking schools and stuff, it's money. It's to make money. Let's not lie about it. You know, they love to have this thing that, oh, it's martial arts is not about violence. Yeah, it could be about making money. Not anymore though. Like this, unless you're running like MMA related stuff, you're not going to make any money. And I probably said this in the previous episode. I see a lot of these MMA gyms going out of business because who the hell wants to go get strangled two or three times a week, you know, and then doing Muay Thai and stuff, and in an overpriced place that has an octagon set up. Like, most people do not take classes to be MMA fighters.
It's not going to last.
No.
No.
Not at all. In fact, a lot of people are demanding a return to that learning karate and kung fu with the philosophy behind it and a little, and it used to be with Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and now Brazilian jiu-jitsu has been turned into more of a sport art to be taught. You know, it's just it's a very common problem with the arts. But it's not gonna last. And I don't, there's something about the way kids are growing up today. I don't think they have the deal with the bullying schoolyard violence that I had to deal with when I was a kid. I don't think
it's
learn a martial art and learn how to fight, you know?
No, it's I think the need for not the need, but the imperative to learn how to defend yourself has sort of been removed from society.
Yeah.
And so you don't have a lot of, you don't have a lot of parents saying, oh, you know, kids bullying you, we'll pop them in the mouth. Cause you know, it's just not the world we live in anymore. It's all changed. So,
right.
You know, it's just a different, you know,
different, it's a different time, different mindset, different everything these days.
Yeah. No, I mean, if it were today, and these events and this movie were happening today, well, the Cobra Kai would be in jail. LaRusso would have had a nice lawsuit.
Daniel and his mom. Daniel's mom wouldn't need that phony computer job because they would have been able to live well off of Zabka's family, you know?
Right. And then Kreese would have been sued because he was harsh to his students. And, you know, it's just a lot of things.
When I was watching it with my wife, I was telling her, imagine a school like this existing today. That just wouldn't happen, you know? Like, I mean, well, even in back then, you know?
They didn't exist back then.
No, I didn't say today. I said, you know, imagine a school like this. There's no way you would keep your students with this. This is like a military school, you know.
And apparently, there was some missing stuff from that were written in the script where apparently Johnny was also in need of a father figure. Mm-hmm. And that element's lost in the editing, or they didn't shoot the scenes or whatever. And Kreese was sort of like his dad. And that's actually addressed in Cobra Kai, where they sort of
address it in one line where Pat Morita's character Miyagi says, those students aren't bad. Their teacher's bad. Students only as good as their teacher.
Yeah.
You know, so that kind of addresses, you know, they're bad kids because they have a mean teacher.
Yeah. He's teaching them to be these kind of bullying, you know, taught by a mercenary assholes.
Right.
This film bored me. It bored me. Well, this one.
I'm going to say if I saw it when I was a kid in the 80s, and by me that I mean if I was older than I am now, I probably would like it a lot more than I do. Mm-hmm. This is my first time seeing it, and aesthetically I like it a lot. I like the 80s look of it. I kind of like the soundtrack a little bit.
You like the Zamfir pan flute?
Yeah,
he's doing his karate on the boat. You know, they're playing Zamfir.
Yeah, exactly.
They used to advertise Zamfir's greatest hits or his record collections on TV. And when I was a kid, when I saw this movie, I said, this sounds like that Zamfir guy that's on TV. But I didn't know until it played on HBO when I read the credits, you know, flute by Zamfir. And I was like, oh, God.
But I would probably like it a lot more than I do if I saw it when I was older. Seeing it now, you know, being a Rocky fan, you know, I find it interesting,
mm-hmm.
As a point of comparison. But it's not a movie that I think is all that great. As a martial arts movie, well, you know, I don't even think it's fair to compare this to martial arts movies.
I don't consider it a martial arts movie. I think it's a teen drama.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't call it a martial arts movie because it's really not one.
No. And, you know, if you consider it to be a martial arts movie, then watch some martial arts movies.
Right. However, I should say that it steals the learning while you work gimmick from Lau Kar-Lung's Return to the 36th Chamber.
Oh, yeah. Return to the 36th Chambers is totally a movie that is learning martial arts by working.
Yeah, and Robert Mark Kamen admitted that he was, you know, he went to see every movie in Chinatown back in the 70s and, you know, was stealing ideas from those left and right. In fact, he wanted to write The Karate Kid 3. I found an interview with him where he said he originally wanted to write it where Daniel LaRusso and Miyagi are on a boat in Okinawa. Daniel gets hit in the head. He imagines he's in like an ancient Chinese world with Miyagi, and there's flying around and all this stuff. He said all that stuff you saw in Crouching Tiger, he wanted to do because he saw it in all these different Shaw Brothers Wuxia movies, that he wanted to just make a crazy Karate Kid 3 with all this nutso stuff in it. And the studio was like, no, we just want a rehash of the first film.
Yeah, it was safer.
Yeah, they always go for the safe route. And he said, you know, I wanted to do like a Hong Kong movie like in 1989. So there was a lot of guys who wanted to make movies like that because they were going to see these things in Chinatown and saying, oh, I want to bring that to Hollywood. And of course, nothing happens until the Wachowskis make The Matrix and shoot
right. Yeah. Well, in Hollywood, you know, they only want to do what they've been doing. They never.
Right. They want to do the proven thing. But yeah, if you watch Return to the 36th Chamber, or Return of the Master Killer, when I saw it on Black Belt Theater, they have it where they're teaching this young fool. He's working, but he's unknowingly learning martial arts techniques as he's working.
Yeah, Gordon Liu, right?
Right, and it makes it part of his reaction timing, which is kind of the key to martial arts when you're learning blocks and defense and stuff. So a martial artist is going to see more in those movies. Like when he's doing do the brush up and down, that's actually a hand blocking technique from the Tensho kata, and it's taught in other styles. But I mean, a lot of that's authentic. That crane kick, though, ooh, don't even get me started.
Yeah. don't try this at home, kids.
Yeah, but the blocking with the wax on, wax off, brush up and down, that's actually real. Those are real moves that he learned, you know. And his Merc opponents, the Chads, they're not actually going to know that stuff because they're being taught kind of mean kickboxing.
So, Stuart, what are some final thoughts you have on Karate Kid?
Oh, you know, it is of its time, I guess. Doesn't really hold up for me. I find some of it ridiculous. A lot of it ridiculous, actually. Oh, look, it was just there for me. I just sat there and had the dog on the couch with me going, Jesus is shit.
I wanted to do this because I saw the Steelbook Blu-ray for like $5.
That could appeal to the consumer in you.
Exactly, it appealed to the consumer in me, and
it had
Chadzilla and Chad Mothra and Chad King Ghidorah, and you know, it was the Cobra Kai. The cover was all Cobra Kai.
Yeah, but they wanted the rich trad girl. Like that was the prize.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. That's what made me buy it. But I went, oh, I've never seen Karate Kid, and here's the Team Chad Kai, you know, on the cover here. I'll pick it up. Why not?
That's like how it took me so long to finally watch Top Gun.
Oh, man.
I didn't see it till like 2004, 2005.
I haven't seen Top Gun since I was a kid, but I saw that movie so many times when I was a kid, and I hated it. And I saw it because all my friends loved it. Mm-hmm. And I remember always thinking, this movie's boring. Like, I'd rather watch something else. You know, I can't even think.
It's bad. It is not a good movie.
I didn't even like Star Wars at the time. I can't, you know, I'd rather watch, like, you know, Mickey Mouse stuff or something. I don't know.
Neither did my brother, and he was your age. He's your age, and he did not like Star Wars the first time he saw it.
Yeah, the first time I saw Star Wars, I didn't really think much of it, but I got into it later, and I liked it. But... You know, when I saw Top Gun so many times because my friends all thought it was the greatest movie of all time, and I remember never liking it. I remember I would always just grin and bear it. I never complained. I never said this movie sucks. I just remember going, oh, okay, and then sitting there going, I guess we're watching Top Gun again. Where's the Coke, you know?
Yeah, a friend of mine joined the Air Force after he – or the Navy, whichever, after he saw it, and because he thought he wanted to fly – he ended up just sweeping the decks.
That was exactly what they wanted. People to enlist after they watched Top Gun.
The Army needed some gruesome, or the Navy, or the
Air Force
needed some guys to sweep the decks. Hey, let's put out a dumb Tony Scott film and get more workers.
Yeah, I was sitting there just drinking soda going, okay, I guess. But, you know, yeah, it was a total military recruitment video.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the movie that gave birth to your Michael Bay school of filmmaking.
That editing and everything. I guess I'll eventually tell my story of seeing Beverly Hills Cop 2 and getting a massive headache and flu-like symptoms after I saw it. I guess I'll tell it now. But anyway, I felt really ill after I saw Beverly Hills Cop 2, and I didn't know why. I thought, oh, I must have caught a germ in the theater, like an outbreak or whatever. Then I went to see it again a couple weeks later with friends of mine, and I felt the same way. And I realized it was the editing. My eyes were not used to that type of editing, and it was actually making me ill.
Interesting.
That real quick cut editing, I hadn't seen that in movies before.
Well, I got to say, that makes sense, because when I was watching Vines,
mm-hmm.
back when I had a Vine account, I got on Vine, and I remember I had trouble sleeping.
Yikes!
Because of the way, and I remember it was thinking I need to get off of Vine because of the format. You only have a few seconds or whatever, and it repeats.
Yeah,
but something about it messed with my brain, man. I'm telling you, it just it. I'm not kidding.
No, I totally believe you. And the fast cutting made me ill.
It really it really. About it. Yeah, it just, there was something about the way seeing the same thing repeated over and over again. It was amusing. It was addicting. And it was also, it also made my brain, you know, it made me have trouble sleeping. It was like, it gave me anxiety or something. It was weird.
Yeah, I don't know if we've actually evolved to a point we're supposed to actually watch you like visuals in that fashion on video.
No. I think the smartphone has kind of really, you know, put that stuff into overdrive.
Yeah, hence why I won't own one, but, you know, much to the chagrin of my relatives.
Right. So John, what would you give Karate Kid out of 10?
I give it like a 7. I think it's a fine film for kids. I think it's good for people nostalgic for that era. I don't think it's awful. I saw more in it the last time I watched it, and I have to admit I was impressed because it, whether or not it meant to, it was predicting things about boomer parents, latchkey kids, and that sort of thing.
No, that's honestly, the movie went up in my estimation a little bit when you brought that up because I hadn't noticed or considered that.
Yeah. And it might be the first, it might be the first mainstream film to really address that without really meaning to, you know what I mean?
And you're a latchkey kid, so you can.
Yes, I know. I lived it. Like I remember.
It's not something that I was not a latchkey kid. I don't think Stu was. I don't know.
What the hell's that?
But it's not something that would jump out at me, you know?
Yeah. I'm telling you, as an American latchkey kid of the 70s and 80s, this is very, there is more resonance in this with than it will have with anybody else.
Interesting. Well, that makes it go up in my estimation.
And I'll just leave it at that. But I don't blame somebody if they watch this and they were bored like Stu was, or you didn't see all the elements in it that I saw.
Bored. I just didn't care.
I'm saying Stu was bored. I'm saying Stu weren't as impressed. Yeah. I don't blame anybody for not liking it. I'll put it that way.
Well, speaking of bored, what would you give it, Stu?
I was bored by it, so I'll give it 5.
Interesting. I was originally going to give it a 5, but I think John's comments bumped it up to a 6.
I should say my son liked it. So,
if he
can enjoy it, that's some force to its that gives some weight to its timelessness. You know?
Well, and there, you know, this movie continues to be something that kids like. So there's obviously something that works in it. You know,
right.
But anyways,
it clicks with their fear of bullying they never experience.
Yeah,
because they're constantly told bullying is this awful thing and it's going to happen to you. It just doesn't happen.
They think a lot of kids, as much.
You know,
I guess banter in the classroom is bullying now.
Yeah, that's bullying now, which would not have been the case, you know, in my time.
No, back then, bullying was like you got beat up on the playground. You know,
right? Exactly.
It's like, oh, it's recess time. Oh no, that's the time of day I've been fearing all day.
That's when Arnold was scared of the Gooch.
Because that's when I'm going to get my face pounded. You know,
right? Exactly.
You know, it gave me more enjoyment than this movie, knowing that Manowar are completely fucked now.
Yeah, our Facebook group, which I encourage anybody to join. But you're going to have to go through a screening process. Yep. Has become a Man of War hate group the last couple of days.
And you know, I kind of got it. Even though me being a fan of Man of War with Ross the Boss, of course, you know, I saw that story and I went, guys,
couldn't make it to the finish line. It's too, yeah, it was
on
too good not to post.
Your final tour, your farewell tour. And you can't make it to the finish line without pedophilia charges.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Not the charges against this guy and the crimes and fuck that. He should get the whip across his back every day and everything else. But the fact that Manowar couldn't
make
finish.
It better is fire him, get Ross the Boss in there. You know?
Nah, they're tainted, mate. They're gone.
Okay.
They're tainted. He won't go back in there. It's a farewell tour. Just cut it short.
It's
make
farewell
me happy.
Forever.
Yeah. Farewell. Goodbye, fuck off, Manowar. Oh, I can't stand him.
I've never listened to him in my life.
Good.
Well, they've got the guitar player from the Dictators. What's wrong with you?
I never listened to them, but every Dictators fan said, don't listen to Manowar. That's
it's totally different, honestly. Like, you know, it's not, you're not going to love the Dictators and love Manowar. necessarily. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people who do, but but Manowar is like, you know, the cartoon power metal group. they are the only band that's had Orson Welles, Christopher Lee, and Brian Blessed on their albums, though. So
wow, how like ridiculously?
Yeah, no, they've had a lot of big name actors on their albums. So
jeez, that's crazy.
Yeah, their first record, Orson Welles, is on there, and they did a re-recording where Christopher Lee did the Welles parts, but.
And Blue Oyster Cult gets Howard Stern to do an intro on Club Ninja.
Hey, everybody, don't fear the Reaper. Hoo hoo, Robin.
Don't fear the Reaper. I'm only doing this because my sister is, my second cousin actually is married to Eric Bloom, Robin.
But yeah, and I think Brian Blessed was on the Kings of Metal.
Oh, that bloody!
It's just so traditional, all because Vincent Price did Thriller.
Yeah. Oh, what was it? Did you hear that Iron Maiden wanted Vincent Price to do the Number of the Beast intro?
Yeah.
And why didn't Price didn't do it? Because it couldn't meet his money, or
yeah, they said they were willing to pay this much. They said Vincent doesn't get out of bed for more than $20,000. So they went, we found a guy who sounded like Vincent Price who would do it for $300.
Patrick McGowan, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So it was just funny. They were like, you know. But yeah, Vincent Price with Thriller was or it is. By the way, I watched Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein again last night.
Uh-huh.
And it's great at the end where Vincent, yeah, hello, I'm the
Invisible Man.
Light this cigarette. Every Invisible Man movie, he has to light a cigarette. Like even Stars of an Invisible Man, he has to light a cigarette. That's the big special effect.
I haven't watched it on Blu-ray, but I figure I'll probably see Wires for that Invisible Man scene. I wasn't supposed to see.
I didn't see any, but I wasn't looking for him either. You know, right. It was the end of the movie, and it was like and my wife goes, "Is that Vincent Price?" You know, so.
And he only played the Invisible Man in like one movie.
In Invisible Man Returns. That's it.
Right.
Which the only other time he was the Invisible Man.
Yeah, couldn't get Claude Rains to do a cameo. Yeah.
Which, the Wolf Band. Watched that one again the other day.
Uh-huh.
That's the weirdest father and son duo, Claude Rains and Lon Chaney Jr.
Yeah, I know. It's like, boy, the mom must have been huge.
I've got you all beat.
That whole movie feels like it just feels like it's about alcoholism. So Lon Chaney Jr.'s character is so uncomfortable and weird, and then he's just waking up in weird places covered in mud, you know?
Yeah, you watch that movie for Myra Ospinsky or whatever her name is as the gypsy woman. That's amazing.
Maria Ospinskaya. Yeah,
that's her. That's her. It's like, which does the whole speech about the full moon and everything. That's the best part.
I've got you all beat, actually. You've been watching Wolfman and Invisible Man and shit. I actually, don't laugh, but I was curious. And I read the Stormy Daniels book.
Oh no!
Yeah, it was. I don't know.
Save it for after the show.
Were you doing a Andrew Dice Clay after the end of every chapter or sentence?
Oh.
Were the Dice Man jokes just flowing?
Well, for those who do intend to read it, there's not much about Trump. There's about one chapter in the middle of the book. And towards the end. And that's it. All the rest about her and her growing up. And I'm interested in people and how they grew up. And, you know, the typical broken home shit it was. And just, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. So, can I recommend it? Maybe. No, it was just like a head scratcher by the time it was done. I'm like, weird. Weird woman.
Well, it's probably some ghost-written thing done in a rush.
Michael Avenatti wrote it.
No, he does. He wrote the introduction to it. So.
Creepy porn lawyer, yeah.
Ronan Roden probably do a ghost job on it.
It was Ronan Farrow.
Yeah, I should call up Ronan to see if he worked on it. Ah, yeah, man, I worked on it for a week.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm done.
All right, fellas, well,
We actually have a list of films we're doing for the next few months, so we know what the fuck we're doing.
Yeah, we've actually, you know, it's taken us a few years, almost a decade, but we've, you know, figured out a system to instead of hey, what are we doing this week? I don't know. What can we watch on short notice?
It's called called planning ahead, man. Get your shit right.
Yeah, it's been so bad that like, oh, Stu's not going to make it. Call Eric, see if he'll do a Western.
But yeah, we've got a kind of a rotating queue now, so it's good.
Yeah.
Was good. This is the first one in the rotating queue. So anyway, well, I think let's go ahead and call it a day. It's kind of late on my end, so I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
I'll say, yo, peace out, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.